It's good to see each of you here tonight. If you want to open up your Bibles to the book of Esther. We just finished a very busy week with our VBS and a series of lectures with our brother Don Patton. And although those weeks are always very physically exhausting, they're spiritually refilling. And I personally enjoyed a number of the sessions that Brother Don presented to us. They were on topics that we may not typically think about or consider, but it's always good to hear from someone who's done extensive research in a particular field. Brother Don has done a lot of geology and archaeological work. And so I enjoyed hearing about the Dead Sea Scrolls, Joshua's altar on Mount Ebal, the excavation of the Pool of Siloam, the evidence of the fossil record. It was really neat to see all the things that he had back in the artifact room. And then, of course, the Friday night session on Noah's Ark. And so if you didn't get a chance to hear all of the lessons, they're on the website or our YouTube page. I was told that the session from Friday night on Noah's Ark is also on the YouTube page if you want to check that out. But I want to thank everyone who put in so much time and effort to make the week successful. So if you were teaching or helping out, pass out material, or if you were getting set up, or if you were cleaning the building, or you're working on sound, or you were just helping with the kids, get them from place to place, we really appreciate it, and thank you to the elders for inviting Don. You think most people call it a VBS, but when you get to sit for an hour and listen to something without your kids, that's called date night. So that's what we were doing out here. If you saw us sitting kind of close and with the arm reaching around, we were enjoying the quiet time. So Don has a lot of courage. He has a tremendous amount of courage. Setting up an artifact room with 50 kids running around, that takes a lot of faith. But it seems like it worked out, and I think the kids really enjoyed getting to see all the things that he had to bring. I want you to think for just a moment about the most influential person in your life. Someone who has helped you, who has guided you, supported you. The person that you think about that I wouldn't be who I am today. I wouldn't be standing here. I wouldn't be where I am without this person. For many of us, that would be our parents. I think about the lessons that Dad taught me over the years, whether it was on the sports field or at the kitchen table or in his truck when we were driving somewhere. Those were lessons that they stay with me long after I graduated from high school. But it's not just parents that can have an incredible impact on a person's life. And tonight we're going to read about a man who had an influence on a young person, although she was not he was not her father, but yet he impacted her life, and not only her life, but the lives of the entire Jewish people. We're going to look at the man Mordecai, who I believe was a man of great influence. A man of great influence. The book of Esther is set at a time after the Babylonian captivity. The children of Israel, or the people who are living in Jerusalem and Judea, were carried off into captivity, and after that period had ended, God allowed a remnant to return to the land. The books of Ezra and Nehemiah talk about the people that went back to rebuild the wall, to rebuild God's temple. But there were a number of people who stayed behind, who did not return to the land, and the book of Esther describes a young Jewish woman who is living in the capital city of Persia, in the city of Susa. Read with me in Esther chapter 2, beginning in verse 5. Esther 2 and verse 5. It says, "In Susa, the citadel, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjaminite. Kish had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captives who had been captured with Jeconiah, the king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And Mordecai had brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. The young woman was lovely and beautiful. When her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. Verse 5 tells us that Mordecai was from the tribe of Benjamin, that he is from the clan of Kish. This is presumably the same family that King Saul was from. And that detail becomes relevant later in the book as Mordecai will have a run-in with one of the descendants of King Agag, who was the leader over the Amalekites. If you remember, God had told Saul to utterly destroy the people of Amalek, and yet now here one of the descendants is causing problems or issues for God's people. But Mordecai and his family is taken from Jerusalem. They're carried off into captivity. And now we find him here living in the city. And I want you to see, first of all, that Mordecai is a man of influence because he was a selfless provider. Mordecai, it tells us in verse 7 that he brought up Hadassah or Esther because she had neither father nor mother. Esther is in a desperate situation here. Try to imagine, she is without any parents. She's living in a foreign place. She is a woman. She is a Jew. She is in a place that's very different from where her family was brought up. And she has no parents, no support, no protection. And yet then this somewhat unlikely rescuer steps in. The text tells us that he is the son of her uncle. This is her first cousin, Mordecai. And he agrees, or he is willing to take her in as one of his own. He's evidently much older than her. The text says that he took her as his own daughter, as if this was his own child. This is not the evil stepmother scenario where someone gets taken in and it's out of obligation and then they are just treated as a lower class, like a servant. They're just there to do the housework and chores and things like that. Mordecai was not looking to take advantage or profit from her, but instead he genuinely cares for her. After Esther is taken into the king's palace for consideration to become the queen, notice what it says in Esther chapter 2 and verse 11. It said, "And every day Mordecai walked in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and what was happening to her." He's checking up on her. He's concerned about her welfare. Is she doing okay? Providing for our children is a natural instinct. We see that in nature. Animals, without even being told, they go to great lengths to provide for their young. Birds will fly long distances in order to find food and bring it back to the nest. They put themselves in harm's way. They often go without in order to provide for their young. And why do they do this? Why do they go to so much trouble to feed those that are depending on them? It's because that's how God designed them. God instilled within them this innate desire to care for their young. And the same should be true of humans, that we would care for our young. But what's even more remarkable is when someone is willing to spend the time and the energy and the effort and to make that same sacrifice for one who is not their offspring, for one that does not come from their own body. You don't see that much in nature. If mama bird leaves the nest and the neighbor's cat gets her, it's not looking too good for those baby birds. Mr. Squirrel doesn't come over to take care of the brood. And they are typically going to die. But humans have this incredible thing called choice. We have choice. We can choose to love, to provide, to give, and to help. And that's what we see in the man Mordecai. He makes the choice. He is a man of influence because he decides to become a selfless provider for this girl who is at risk, to take her as his own. There is no task more noble than raising a child. Without it, society ceases to exist. And yet, what other endeavor requires the same level of attention, focus, time, effort, energy? It is a 7 day a week, 365 days a year type of job. Parents don't get vacations 3 weeks away from the kids. There's no sick days for mom and dad. They are constantly needed and depended upon. To be a parent means to learn to be unselfish. I opened up the iPad this morning, and there was syrup on the screen. You can't mix your breakfast and technology. They just don't go together. But there are all kinds of things that where we have to stop, and it is an inconvenience to us, where we have to put something that we would want or desire on hold because we are investing in something that is so much greater, something that is so much more important. Dad used to come and pick me up from school. He would take me back to the house so I could get ready for the game. Then we'd go to the batting cages for an hour. Then we'd head on to the field for a two-hour game. Then we'd go and pick up some food. We wouldn't get back to the house until 8:30 or 9 o'clock. And looking back on that, what did he accomplish? What did he get done that night? I'll tell you, he got a lot done because he was investing in me. Not to be some great baseball athlete. I never got a scholarship or anything like that. But he was offering his support. He was present. He was visible. He was there. For Mordecai, it was more than just letting Esther live with him. In chapter 2 and verse 20, it says that Esther had not made it known, her kindred or her people, as Mordecai had commanded her. For Esther obeyed Mordecai just as when she was brought up by him. We're not told of other people that were helping in this process. There's no Mrs. Mordecai that's mentioned. And what we see is more than just a provider of physical things. Mordecai was instructing. He was guiding. He was providing counsel to her. In this instance, he tells her not to reveal her identity. He wants to protect her. He's concerned about her welfare. She needed someone to teach, to provide counsel, to show her the difference between things that were wise and things that were foolish. In Proverbs chapter 3, in verse 1, it says, "My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you." That's what made Mordecai a man of great influence, because of the instruction and the guidance that he offered in providing for Esther. We'll also notice in Esther chapter 2 and verse 21. Esther 2 and verse 21. It says, "In those days, while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, two of the king's eunuchs, Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. So the matter became known to Mordecai, who told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. And when the inquiry was made into the matter, it was confirmed, and both were hanged on the gallows. And it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king." In verse 21, it says that Mordecai sat at the king's gate. The king's gate was a place of commerce and where they would transact and do business. There were government affairs that were discussed. And as Mordecai would sit there, it probably indicates that he had some type of official position within the government. But here we see he was a man of influence because he stood for justice. Mordecai defended and stood for what was right and good. While he's at the king's gate, he becomes aware of a plot against the king. And there are two doorkeepers or eunuchs who are planning to assassinate the king. This type of thing was very common during these times. If you're a king, you often didn't live very long. You were either killed while abroad fighting a war, or you were killed at home, someone who was trying to take over your throne. But upon hearing about this plot, Mordecai takes this very sensitive information and he gives it to Queen Esther, who then informs the king. And after looking into this matter, these men are executed, the conspirators. I want you to think about this. Mordecai is a Jew serving under a king who is not much of a God-fearing man. What if you heard that there was a plot to kill the evil dictator? And not just any random person, but this is a man who has taken your daughter and conscripted her to be his queen. Are you really that concerned if he gets what's coming to him? Mordecai could have easily stepped to the side and said, well, let's just see how this plays out. You know, I'm not necessarily going to help them with this. I don't want to get in there, but I don't want to get in their way. This is none of my business. I'm just going to act like I didn't know about it or I didn't hear about it. He could have washed his hands and let this play out. But instead, he shows courage and he takes this to Esther, and it ultimately saves the king's life. Mordecai stood for what was right, and he did that by being proactive. When there was something that needed to happen, when there was something that wasn't right, Mordecai took action. We were with a family a few years ago at a McDonald's eating some ice cream one night. And it was probably about 9 o'clock in the evening, and there was a man who came into the dining area that was intoxicated. And he looked like he hadn't taken a shower in a couple weeks, so not sure what his situation was. But he went up to the counter and he started talking to the staff there and was not making much sense. So they asked him if he would leave. And as he was coming out of the restaurant, he stopped and started talking to one of the kids in our group. It's a boy about 7 years old. And again, was not making much sense. But then he reached out his hand and started to touch him or grab him. And I don't think he was trying to hurt him. I think he was just out of his mind. He didn't know what he was doing. But you should have seen the response of that dad that was with us. It was like ninja reflexes. I mean, he was out of his seat, up in between the two of them within a couple of seconds. I was just eating my Sunday, you know, watching this happen. That guy could have had a knife. He could have had a gun. He could have had a mad right hook. Who knows? But he put himself in between somebody who was potentially dangerous and the child that he loved. Men of influence don't wait to be told. They don't have to be poked or prodded. They don't have to be coerced into doing what's right. They defend those who are defenseless. They do things the right way for the right reasons. And Mordecai shows his integrity, his honor, the type of man that he was by his willingness to defend and protect a godless king. For his actions, Mordecai doesn't receive some parade of honor. He's not given a great reward or some type of recognition, and at least not immediately. It's not till later in the account that he is recognized. But he does this thing because it was the right thing to do. Also notice in chapter 3 and verse 5. Chapter 3 and verse 5, it says, "And after these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes who were with him. And all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman, for so the king commanded concerning him. But Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. Then the king's servants who were within the king's gate said to Mordecai, 'Why do you transgress the king's command?' Now it happened when they spoke to him daily, and he would not listen to them, that they told it to Haman to see whether Mordecai's words would stand. For Mordecai had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay homage, Haman was filled with wrath." We are told here that this man Haman is elevated to a position of great honor within the king's government. He's given a high position. And there is this edict or rule that goes out that everyone should bow or pay homage to Haman when he is passing by, when he's sitting at the gate, except Mordecai makes the decision not to bow. This evidently was because of his heritage. In verse 4, it says that he told them that he was a Jew. Apparently there is something here that bowing to Haman, perhaps he felt like this would be offering worship to a man. It would have been somehow violated his conscience or his obligation to the Lord. And so he refuses. We see that Mordecai was a man of influence because he held to his convictions. He was firm in his belief. Notice what it says here. This is not just on one occasion. Look at verse 4. It says that when they spoke to him daily, he would not listen to them. They are getting on to him again and again. They are trying to pressure him. It says that they told it to Haman. They take it all the way up to the highest level. They inform Haman that there is this man who is disrespecting him. They give him second chances. And yet he continues to defy the king's command. He was committed. He held firm to his convictions. Do you know anyone like that? Do you know a person who is committed? They have committed themselves to something. It doesn't matter what's going on around them. It doesn't matter what other people say. It doesn't matter what the fallout or consequences might be, whether they are ridiculed or made fun of. They will not compromise their position. I think about Noah and the amount of time that it took him to construct the ark, and how the community and the people that lived around him would have seen that happening, and it would have just been a source of great laughter. Everyone pointing and thinking how ridiculous it was that, first of all, he would think it's going to rain and that the world would be flooded. And then he's going to all the trouble to build this huge vessel. What is it like to be the only person who doesn't bow down? What is it like to be the only person who doesn't talk that way or hasn't seen that movie or doesn't partake or share in that activity? What is it like to be the only one? The truth is, we are rarely are we really the only person who is trying to stand for what's right. We may feel isolated and alone when we face temptation or trials, but there are other brothers and sisters, men and women who are fighting similar battles, going through similar trials, and that should give us comfort. But even if we are by ourselves and we're facing something very difficult, it should give us comfort that the Lord stands with us. In 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 16, it says, "At my first defense, no one came to stand by me, but all deserted me. May it not be charged against them. But the Lord stood by me and strengthened me so that through me the message might be fully proclaimed and all the Gentiles might hear it." You know, we are fortunate to live in a community where there are lots of believers. There are people that profess and believe in God. But how does that, if we were to be in a situation where there was not support, where there weren't churches, where there weren't other Christians, would we still stand firm for what we believe in? When we place our convictions on the Word of God, we are basing our lives upon something that is solid. It's like a rock that doesn't move or give way, so it causes our faith to be steadfast, concrete, and immovable. And so when you think about how people were thrown into arenas, how Christians could be burned at the stake, how they were crucified for their faith, it's because these people held to their convictions. They remained steadfast and committed, even in the face of great persecution. When we live by principles and promises that are greater and higher than ourselves, we will be a light and an influence to those who are around us. Finally, we see that Mordecai was a man of influence in that he encouraged others to do what was right. Look with me at Esther chapter 4 and verse 14. Or back up to verse 13. It says, "And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, 'Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?'" Chapter 4 in Esther describes this decree that goes out. And all the Jews are to be destroyed. And when Mordecai hears about this, he puts on sackcloth and ashes, and he goes about and he's mourning outside of the king's gate. And when Esther hears about it, she tries to send him some clothes to get him dressed out of the clothes of garments, or the clothes of mourning, but he refuses. And finally, Mordecai sends someone back to Esther to tell her what's going on, about the decree that has been made, about the danger that the Jewish people are in. And he urges her to go in and plead before the king on their behalf. Now, when Esther hears this, she is apprehensive. She knows the law that if anyone goes in to see the king without being invited, and if he doesn't extend his favor, they could be executed. And so she's nervous about going and trying to speak to the king. And this is what Mordecai responds to her here in chapter 4. He tells her that this opportunity has been presented to her. Notice what he says, the faith that he shows. In verse 13, he says, he says that if she is not the one to rise up or to go in and provide relief and deliverance, then there will be deliverance that comes from another place. He's basically saying that the Jews are not going to be destroyed. God is going to take care of them. God's name is not mentioned in the book of Esther, but I believe this is a reference. This is an indication of his divine protection and care for his people. But then he asks her that question, "Who knows whether you have been appointed? Who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for a time like this? Maybe this is the reason why you were chosen to be queen. Maybe this is why you are in this position. And maybe God is going to use you to deliver and save his people." And so we see Mordecai encourages Esther to do the right thing, to stand up, to have courage. He presents this situation in front of her. He lays it out. He helps her to see the need, the circumstance, the crisis that they're in. And he helps her to understand her responsibility and the role that she needs to play. Men of influence, they not only set their hearts to follow God and to do what's right, but they also encourage and lead others to do the same. This is done not just by the example that they set, but by intentional actions of reaching out and providing wisdom, by mentoring. Sometimes this comes in the way of a challenge. They call us to do something that maybe we haven't done in the past, or maybe we've never done before. They encourage us. They sometimes admonish us. They see an area where we're kind of going off course, and so they correct or bring us back. But men of influence look to help their spouse, their children, their brothers and sisters in Christ, people at work or in their community, to do the right thing and seek after the Lord. Mordecai could have gone into hiding. He could have left or fled the country. But yet we see him stay and work in the situation where he was. And he works through Queen Esther. With no Mordecai, does Esther go to the king? Does she deliver her people from destruction? Mordecai encouraged her and strengthened her to do the right thing. We think about the men and women who have had tremendous influence on us. ultimately God is the Father of all mankind. And we look to Him as the one who selflessly provides for us. He gives us everything that we need. He is a God of justice and of truth and righteousness. He is a God that stays firm to His promises. He is unwavering. And He is a God that encourages and strengthens and helps us to be able to walk in His ways. We're going to close with an invitation. If there's something that we can do to encourage you in your relationship and your walk with God, please come down to the front as we stand and sing.